Part and Parcel by Florence Fullard. One of the old sayings that our parents and grandparents used to tell us was this one: imagination goes a long, long way. Shall we use some of this imagination and travel within the years 1929 to 1939? If we strain our ears, we can hear the clatter of the clogs upon the hard sets as the people make their way towards that hive of industry that helps to feed and clothe them, the mill. We can even hear the hooter that tells them the time has come when they should be at their looms or frames. Long hours were worked in these mills, and the work was hard. Saturday morning having to be taken up with cleaning and oiling these machines ready for the next week. We will remember some of these mills and workshops as we journey on, and how they help to form the pattern of our lives. We will cover the areas in which we lived and were brought up, namely Somerset and Ramsbottom. 1929 was the year we left school and had to join the land of the workers, the mill at Wood Road being our first place of employment. James Ashworth Limited were the owners, and its product was cotton blankets, both spinning and weaving. It possessed a huge stone-built chimney. If we were to linger for a short while, we would see the patient horses carrying the finished product to and fro to the mill in the centre of the village, known as the Island. Here the blankets would be bleached, then sent back to the parent mill for dispatch. Then, of course, there was the mill at Brooks Bottoms, J. Hoyle and Sons, the rules and regulations being much stricter here. The products from this mill were as follows: drills, planes, duck cloths and linos. The people who helped in the making of these products had to travel a good distance day by day. As well as the village folk, they came from Bury, travelling by train or as far as the New Inn, Walmsley, on the tramcar, then walking the rest of the way to the mill. Others came from Ramsbottom and Tottington, in all kinds of weather. Then a hard day's work followed. It certainly was hard graft. This mill, at one time of the day, possessed three chimneys, and we noticed with surprise that the one they did leave behind was brick-built, and far smaller than the one at Wood Road. We will now make our way to Holcombe Brook. We see the large and important firm of Charles Ainsworth and Sons, bleachers and dyers. This was one of the firms that supplied the khaki needed for the uniforms of the army, both in the First World War and the Second. The chimney belonging to this mill stood a great height, and the year 1905 stood out boldly. Alas and alack, this firm, like countless others, played a big part in the spoiling of the river. As we continue on our travels towards Ramsbottom, we notice a lane jutting off the main road. If we were to follow it, we would come across a mother works known as Wood Hay Dyeing Company Limited, a very busy mill in its day. Back on the road again, we come upon a large towel weaving mill, the owner of which is a Mr. William Holden. Now, this man played a big part during the cotton slump of the 30s. To boost the sale of cotton goods, he helped to promote the quest for a cotton queen, spending time and money to get it underway. When the queen was finally picked and chosen, she paid a visit to Ramsbottom, and Mr. Holden was a very proud man indeed, as he showed this very important person around his mill. The chimney here was small and squat. On the left-hand side of the road stands the engraving firm of J. Spencer Limited. The chimney is 100 feet high and has 8 sides, octagonal, and was built in 1800. Keeping to the right, we come upon another busy firm, the BDA Hope Works. This employs a lot of the townspeople, different and difficult hours being worked. Narrow streets hem it in on three sides, one of them being Hope Street. A little farther on is Nuttall Lane, which will take us to Nuttall Village. In the years we are travelling in, this village was very independent, having its own shops, pubs and workshops. The cottage hospital played a big part regarding the people's health. As we get near to the spot where the river flows, we see a cotton mill, whose chimney is a big landmark. It can be seen quite a distance away. As we pass by, we notice with surprise that this particular chimney is nowhere near the mill, and yet the smoke pours out. Very near to the river stand the Ocean Chemical Works, which, sad to say, killed a lot of the trees that used to be very plentiful in this area. Back to the main road again, we walk down Cay Brow. This is rather steep, but at the bottom of the hill, close by the river and the railway, stands a large cluster of mills and places of employment, such as the Cobden Mill, owned by a Mr. William Eccles. This man was spoken of very highly by his workpeople, and we can't help but admire the skill and patience the weaver needs to ply the shuttles in order to produce the different colours and patterns in the towels. Not an easy job by any means. Quite near to this one was the Square Works. Among the products of this firm was the material known as muslin. If we were to look towards the railway, we would see in the distance a large red brick building. This is the Home Weaving Company, which also possesses a huge chimney. Near to the Square Works, we find Strang's Iron Foundry. Very important, this one. At the bottom of Baptist Brow stands the old ground weaving mill. Keeping to the side of the railway, we pass Shepherd's Tower Mill. All these mills are very near to the river. We mustn't miss the Rose Cotton Mill, which is a part of this cluster. Over the railway crossing stands a big paper mill, known in the 30s as Ramsbottom Paper Mill. The height of this chimney is 151 feet. In 1980, 15 feet was taken off. It is of brick construction and stands very near to the works. At one time of the day, this firm ran 4 Lancashire boilers. On the opposite side of the road, we make our way down Kenyon Street. Mills are built all down the left-hand side, the bottom of all being the Britannia Works, owned by Kay's soap manufacturers. The chimney is 120 feet of red Accrington brick. The top was taken off in 1981, 3 metres, transferred from coal to gas in 1979, and now does the work of 2 Lancashire boilers. The distance between the boiler to the chimney is 12 yards. Then we come upon the warehouses and weaving shed of Pemberton's Cotton Mill. This firm came from Wigan, and like the rest of them, possessed a big tall chimney. Alongside this one, we find another tower mill, the Grove, and round the corner in Stead Street stands a cotton weaving mill belonging to Mr. L. Stead. We come to realise that the river is very important indeed to the running of all these mills. On our way to Bridge Street, we pass the firm of John Wood's engineers. This was once a cotton mill, and ended its days as that, just after 1918. This firm, Woods, was affected by the cotton slump, but they carried on as calico and textile printers, engineers, also paper printing. At the top of Bridge Street, we turn the corner and make our way towards Stubbins. Here the people are just as busy earning their living inside the four walls of the different mills. Underneath the railway arch, we come upon the Cuba Mill. This mill provided the tubes for the winders and weavers and spinners. The chimney was 200 feet high, and in later years, 1974 to be exact, this was demolished. The building itself was built of stone and stood 4 stories high. One had to pass through the iron gates to reach the premises. On the same side of the road, over the bridge, under which flows the river, we come to a big and important firm, namely Turnbull's and Stockdale's. This firm employed a good deal of the townsfolk and was, as one might expect, very near to the river. The road goes uphill now, and on the opposite side of the mill stands this large house, which at the time of writing housed the mill owner and his family. We see another mill, the Chatterton Weaving Company. This is built of red brick and was in full production until just after 1929. As we reach the bridge, we are sharply reminded of an incident that happened a long time ago. During the Industrial Revolution, when people strongly objected to the advent of machinery, from this spot, hordes of them marched into Ramsbottom and on into Alton, Bury. They joined other protesters at Wood Hill, on the site where the Bury Boot and Shoe Company now stands. This building was once a busy cotton mill and traded under the name of Wood Hill Mill. To return to our 10 years of travel, we mustn't forget the mill that stood on Carr Street, named the Springwood Mill. Stone cottages stood near to the mill, and of course we find a good supply of water there, the lodge. In these enlightened days, we know it as the Old Mill Hotel. As a good deal of property in this town is built of stone, we come to the conclusion that Wilde's Quarry at Shuttleworth played a big part in the construction of them. We cannot leave this part of the world without bringing in Skaper Forrest of Stubbins Lane and Crompton's paper mill, very important in their own right. We will now leave this town and district of the 30s, and in so doing, we wish her well in the future years to come. Footnote. One fact that is worth remembering and thinking about is the following. On the opposite side of the River Irwell from Wood Road Mill, there once stood another important works. This was built of red brick with a huge chimney and was known as Somerset Brickworks. This was demolished after the First World War. Then again we remember that when Somerset was independent, it manufactured its own gas. In fact, there were two gasworks, one at Brooks Bottoms, near what was known as the Brick Houses, and the other one was on the other side of the village, in Railway Street. As children, we could still see the ruins of this one. In our own day, the Somerset Prize Band held their meetings in there. 1934 brings back memories regarding Mr. W. Eccles of the Cobden Mill. Before he moved into that mill, he owned a much smaller one at Hazlehurst. When it was vacant, a shoe and slipper firm took it over until the war years. Creeping to the right, we come upon another busy firm. The year 1929, the year I left school, and my footsteps took me to the same place that countless more had trod before and afterwards, inside the cotton mill. The work was hard and the hours long, and many was the time I wished with all my heart that I could get out into the fresh air and be as free as a bird. The stone walls seemed cold and unfriendly. I felt scared as I walked through the gates up the stone steps to the top room of the building, which by the way was 4 story high, and into the spinning room. These frames were long, and there were quite a lot of them. My job, along with the other girls, was to take the full bobbins off the spindles and replace them with empty ones. We carried a duffing can in front of us, one side being used for full bobbins, the other for the empty ones. Then each bobbin had to be joined to the cotton reel that ran over the top of them. This was called piecing. We couldn't dilly-dally over the job, as the spinner's wages stopped when the frame wasn't working. Sometimes 2 or 3 frames filled up together. Then was the time we had to hurry from one frame to another. Just before the engine stopped for the night, we had to sweep the alleys and leave them clean for the day after. Saturday morning was worked. This was taken up by cleaning and oiling the machinery. During the week, a lot of the people had to carry their dinners to the mill, as they lived quite a distance away. We all trooped into the dining room and sat at wooden tables on long forms. 1 hour was taken up for this. There was 1 or 2 shops near the mill where one could buy hot pies, etc. At the end of the week, on Fridays, one of the office staff would come into the different rooms carrying a tray. On this was placed little tins
with people's names on them. These contained that precious wage we had worked so hard for. I held out my hand and the money was tipped into it. My first week's wage was 7 and 6 pence, just enough to buy a pair of clogs. These were essential, as shoes were not suitable for the greasy floors. Saturday was the day I looked forward to, as I could go home for my dinner and enjoy it. There was no hurrying back to the mill until Monday. Before I left school in the early 20s, I used to lean over the stone wall that ran near our house and look down into the village. On a winter's night, the lights of the lamps flickered, and among them were the lights from the windows of the mill. These were gas lamps. It never entered my head then that before long I would walk inside those rooms. The days and years sped on, and the threat of war came nearer. It even affected life in the village and the mill. We had to stop work every so often and climb down the fire escape that ran down the back of the mill and take shelter in the woods until the all clear sounded. Men and boys were taken from their homes and jobs to defend their country against the common foe. Those unable to fight were left to carry on the best way they could. Strange people seemed to come from nowhere, and it took us a long time to understand their speech and ways of living. Our village wasn't the same anymore. When the conflict was over, one by one the mills went on short time and eventually closed down. Our mill was no exception, and came the day when it too closed its gates for the last time. As one looks at the spot where it once stood, one can hardly believe of all the hours and time spent within those walls, a lifetime of experience. Part of Our Heritage by Florence Fullard. We will more or less concern ourselves with the area we were brought up in, namely Somerset, just a little village nestling underneath the high hills, but nevertheless very important in its own right and to us. The River Irwell winds its way through the village, cutting it in half. In its time and in our own memory, the water has done untold damage. During the heavy rains, it has done and still does overflow its banks, causing disastrous floods and damage. Loss of life and property is unbelievable. The part of the village where the river flows is low-lying, and in our school days, a lot of the cottages stood very near to the water. One street, Railway Street to be exact, was typical of this. The Long Row, as we called it, consisted of cottages, one half having back doors, but the other half no. Through the back windows, one could see the river as it flowed by. Naturally, when the water was high, it seeped in through the walls, making the houses damp. Farther along Railway Street stood the primitive Methodist chapel, this getting more than its fair share of the swollen river. The Sunday school was built underneath the chapel, and so took the full force of water. Alongside this building stood two houses, then the co-op. As luck would have it, this shop stood on ground that was just that little bit higher, but still the water got dangerously near. There are quite a few bridges to this day where one has to cross to get to the other side of the river. One of these is known as Twist Bridge. In 1955, an incident happened which could have been very tragic. On this particular spot, the river takes a sharp bend as it flows on to Wood Road. As usual, owing to a heavy downpour of rain, the river rose swiftly and caused the soil on the bank to give way. One or two trees stood on this bank, and suddenly, without warning, their hold on the soil gave way, and down they crashed into the water, bringing a good portion of the stone wall with them. Another bridge along Railway Street took us over to the island, where stood a mill and a few cottages. In Brooks Bottoms, near where the firm of Joshua Wells once stood, the road goes over the river again. It is very rough and stony here. The mill, along with countless others, played its part in the spoiling of the river. A large wooden bridge once carried the steam trains over on their journey from Bury to Ramsbottom. In 1928, an accident occurred which was tragic. Workmen were in the act of pulling this bridge down to replace it with a much stronger one. A train had just passed over it when down came the whole wooden structure, bringing the men with it. As luck would have it, the river was low in its bed, but nevertheless some of the men were hurt and had to be taken to hospital. This incident certainly put our village on the map. Again the river played havoc, this time going past the area which we now know as Waterside Road. In our school days, this was a very rough and narrow road. An iron railing separated the river from the road, and sometimes we would lean over these railings and visualise the river as it could be. Just after the Second World War, this road gave way, and the water, already swollen, carried a good portion of it along its way. The road was deemed unsafe and closed to traffic for quite some time. The authorities had to commence and build a new road as we know it today. But still the river flows on and on. On its way to Bury, it flows through Wood Road. Another bridge is there, known as Chestwheel Bridge. In our young days, this was very narrow, having been built in the days when the horse reigned supreme. The river here runs smoothly and gently, sometimes seeming not to move at all. In recent times, this bridge was widened and strengthened to cope with the increasing volume of traffic. We will now follow the river as it flows on towards Birs, passing as it goes the green countryside with plenty of trees. We notice that the river is now much wider than it was before. Once upon a time, the village of Birs was quite a busy place. To this day, one can see the ruins of the cottages, and we can visualise what it was like in its heyday. The river flows underneath the main road, and the Star Bleach Works once stood on its banks. During the First World War and afterwards, this was an important mill, employing as it did a lot of the village folk and beyond. During the Second World War, it was taken over to house Italian prisoners of war. In our enlightened days, this particular area is being considered and looked upon as a conservation area, the river playing a big part in this project. We will now retrace our steps back toward Ramsbottom, and on our way there we will pass through Nuttall Village. The river tumbles and winds its way through here. One spot that it passes is the one-time beauty spot of Jacob's Ladder. In its day, this was reached by crossing over a wooden bridge, up the little steps and across the fields onto the busy Bury to Manchester Road. A lot of houses and cottages, including the village public house, used to stand alongside its banks, and a busy cotton weaving mill drew its supply of water from the river. Close by the river we see the railway lines, and in our mind's eye we can see the different mills and workshops that depended on the river and the railway for their very life. We reach a spot known as Peel Bridge. The river flows under here, and because the road in this part of Ramsbottom is low-lying, candles and still does cause a lot of damage. 1936 was a very bad year for floods. The street known as Kenyon Street suffered badly. At that time, a lot of houses stood in that area, and with the various mills and workshops on the other side, the damage caused by the swollen river was dreadful. On the other side of the bridge, a cricket field caught the full force of flood water and was one huge lake. Since then, the course of the river has been slightly altered. The river still overflows its banks, but in that particular area of Ramsbottom, the damage hasn't been quite so extensive. On we travel towards Stubbins. Here the river was and still is something to be feared. It runs very near to the railway line, and the train used to pass over the bridge near the centre of the village. The roadway underneath this bridge had to be lowered to allow the increasing volume of traffic to pass through safely. But alas and alack, the water still seeps through during the heavy rains, and more often than not, the transport has to stop until the water subsides. We will now say farewell to this river as it flows on and on. The actual length of it is 39 miles, from its tiny beginnings, 1.5 miles from Bacup, to its tumbling into the Manchester Ship Canal. It fairly takes one's breath away when we realise how important this river has been and still is.
Oh, that's fine.
Past and Present by Florence Fuller. Remembering as we journey on the various places of worship that used to stand in the village of Summerseed. During the 1920s, when we were children, the Sunday school played a big part in our lives, and the memories are still very vivid. Such as the Primitive Methodist Church that used to stand on the corner next to the co-op. Many happy hours were spent there. Then the little church on the other side of the village, known as St. Wilfrid's. This was of Church of England faith, and during the 1920s belonged to Christ Church Wormsley. The people of this church used the village institute for their various efforts. Many years later, an extension was built alongside the church. As time went on, Holcombe Church took charge of it, and so it remained until the hand of progress closed it for worship. Nowadays, it is run as a village theatre. We mustn't forget the big place of worship on the hill, Rowland's Wesleyan Methodist, a fine building and very imposing. The graves of the village people surround it, and the day school stands alongside. When the sermons was held at the Primitives, the evening service was held in the Rowland's Chapel, on account of it being a much larger building. The Whit Friday processions were shared by the two schools, St. Wilfrid's having their own. Summerseat Liberal Club was taken over by the Roman Catholics, as it was quite a long way for them to travel to Ramsbottom. We make our way now to Holcombe Brook. Facing us is the steep hill that takes us up to Holcombe Village, where stands their church, a magnificent building with its clock chiming away the hours. This church stands overlooking Ramsbottom. What stories it can tell, looking down in days gone by on all the factory and house chimneys pouring out their smoke and grime. One has to pass through a lych gate to reach this church. The day school and Sunday school stand a few yards away. Back down the hill we go, and the next place of worship we see is Holcombe Brook Methodist, a nice friendly place. At the beginning of Nuttall Lane we find St. Andrew's Church, very important in its own right, going back many years. This too has a clock which tells us that time waits for no man. The day school, which stands very near, just hums with activity. Across the main road on Dundee Lane, on the left hand side, we see the Congregational Church, and on the right is the Presbyterian Church. Down towards the town centre, we pass Ramsbottom Primitive Methodist Church, the top of Cape Brow. People from Summerseat Primitives help the people here on sermon day, and vice versa. Very near to this one stands St. Joseph's Church, of Catholic faith. The day school belonging to this is just a few yards away. A little farther on, we see the Baptist Church. This is on the main road at the top of Baptist Brow. On towards the marketplace, up Carr Street, stands the Pentecostal Church. Down Bridge Street, off Crow Lane, stands the Parish Church of St. Paul, a beautiful building whose clock dominates the scene. A garden is laid out in front of the church, where the weary may rest. In Crow Lane itself stands the day school, where various events are held. If we were to carry on round the bend of Crow Lane, we would come across a large building. This is the New Jerusalem Church. This one faces the main road that leads to Stubbins. We mustn't forget Patmos Methodist at the bottom of Field Row, then Marketplace Methodist. On we go into Stubbins, where we come across St. Philip's, the day school alongside. 1,050 is some of these places of worship have to go. A sad state of affairs. Another place of worship which we cannot fail to mention is Park Congregational Church. This stands on the main road overlooking Ramsbottom. The notes worth remembering are Railway Street Methodist Summer Seat was closed for worship and deemed unsafe in 1955. In 1932, the merger of Primitives and Wesleyans took place. The Little Church of England, St. Wilfrid's, played a big part in the village. The extension to the church was first used in 1939. Alas and alack, its uses there, these enlightened days, is vastly different than of yore, it now being used as a theatre. The church at Rowlands has been demolished, and the graveyard makes it made a great deal smaller. The people and make use of some of the rooms in the day school for their services. 1,000 pities this had to happen. The Presbyterian Church in Dundee Lane has long since gone. In the 1920s and early 30s, it was used for the meeting place of guides and brownies. Ramsbottom Primitives took its turn at being demolished, and the garden is now laid out on the spot where it stood. Very sad. The Baptist Church has been taken over by an industrial firm, and the New Jerusalem Church disappeared into the midst of town.